Well, I guess we can get started with class here this morning. Before we get into here much, Kyle, would you mind doing an opening prayer for us?
Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, I just thank you for this day. Lord, I just thank you for the chance we have to have this class, Lord, and to look into Exodus and to learn more about your word, Lord. And just pray that we can take and apply what we discussed this morning to our daily lives, and that we might help us to further help your kingdom grow around here and abroad. Lord, we thank you for your love for us, and we just pray these things in Jesus' name. Amen.
Thanks, Kyle. So we're going to be in part 27 today, but I just thought, since it's been a while, we've been kind of in and out of this at odd times. I'll just go back real briefly here and look at kind of what we've looked at here the last time. And we're going to be, if you wanted to follow along, Exodus chapter 36, we'll kind of go through this quickly. We know that earlier on in the book of Exodus, Moses was given the instructions for the building of the tabernacle. And we went through in quite a bit of detail talking about the different features, different portions, all the different aspects of the tabernacle. And now, when we come up to this point here, chapters like 36 through 38 is when we actually see the actual construction and the building of it. And a lot of this is going to seem a little bit, maybe a little bit repetitive of those earlier passages when it starts talking about, the size and the construction and how it's built. And some of the things we focus on was the men that more of the men that build it, and Moses picked out certain guys, obviously according to their level of skill. And we talked about how, how do we say his name? Bezalel. And then Oholiab in verse 1 there. Sorry, those names are a little bit of a tongue twister. But they're very skillful in all aspects, basically. And he was kind of the head builder to oversee this project. And then he called for men that were skilled, and then everyone whose heart stirred him, for like people that wanted to do it. Guys that were capable and guys that wanted to do it, that's who we called to help build. And then we saw the section there where Moses, he asked for the contributions, like we have to have the necessary parts to build this thing. And he asked the people to bring the things that were needed. And we saw that their willingness, how willing they were, they can continue to bring more and more and more, to the point where Moses had to ask them, basically shut them off, say, well, we got way more than we can deal with here almost. And he had to basically restrain them from continuing to bring things that were needed. And then we go on, and the construction begins, and we talked about, the different curtains and the different layers, that there was a goat hair, and then the covering, the ram skin dyed red, and then the covering of the porpoise skins. We talked about, research, what is porpoise skin, oftentimes the two animals that you'll come across most common is like a badger or a dolphin. I remember we discussed how each one could have a realistic purpose there too, because like the dolphin could be, a waterproof covering, but the badger would be very tough, very rugged. And then also you think about the location they were in. The dolphins wouldn't really be something they could get where they're at, right? They're out in the wilderness. Badger is more suited for that country, that territory. So I think I lean more towards the thought that it was something more like a badger that created that skin. But that's not a definite thing there. Maybe maybe somebody's got some different evidence or different ideas there that would stand with one or the other more too. But as far as the actual structure of each animal, I can see where each one could work and there'd be a purpose for each one, but I just got to thinking about that geologically. I mean, and I don't know. I mean, there are probably some pretty skilled people too, but I'd have a lot more luck going to get a badger than I would a dolphin. just in that aspect, dolphin would be hard to go gather. But I mean, I suppose when you just have to catch a badger and beat him to death or whatever, that might not be that easy either. So, because those buggers are pretty tough. So I don't know. Either way, as I was thinking about that, I mean, there's definitely some challenges in building this thing. Extreme challenges. They'd be, I think, very challenging with today's technology even, but it just adds to how impressive this task really was, I guess. Do you guys have any thoughts on that until we jump on to the next here?
Well, I think there were a lot of people willing to help, it sounds like, because even other countries brought some stuff to them, I think, to help them. Well, I don't know if to help them build this, but as they went along,
yeah,
they did. But I think it probably was a pretty group effort.
I think so, too.
So I don't know if the guy would go out and kill the badgers or if they're
right
doing that.
They probably had methods.
Yeah,
I'm sure. Yeah.
And I think it's a little bit like the church should be now. Probably everybody done their part. Whoever was the toughest ones or the ones that could have the talent to do whatever they done probably.
I think you're right about that. And you know, this wasn't a task that just, you know, one man was doing it all. I mean, it was, and I don't know that there was ever a spot that said, like, a number, you know, the exact number of people that were working on it. You know, I think they had a lot of hands, I think. And if there was a person that was, you know, talented or had the ability to do specific things, I think he did that. And, you know, it just makes sense, too, you know, to do things that way.
Probably was a good foreshadow for the church. Everybody throws in and does what they're capable of doing.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, each as you look at the church, you know, speaking of foreshadows, I mean, we've seen this whole journey through Exodus, it's nothing but a foreshadow, really. There hasn't hardly been a portion of this that hasn't pointed to something in the church. And I think even some of the smaller details, if you call them, if you really look at them, think about it, they really are just, you know, unveiling more and more of those details, I think. Yeah. Yeah, possibly.
Pets, but you use them for something where they grew them up and use their fur, I don't know, or their skins or whatever, so they might not have, I don't know, interesting to see what that would be like, but.
Yeah, that's interesting thoughts, because these materials didn't mean they had to just go out and get, and like the animal skins, it doesn't necessarily say they had to go kill these animals, and they might have had skins and hides and all that stuff with them. That's a good point, too, so definitely different things to perspectives there, I guess. So.
And the little word, you know, you can touch the word and it gives you a definition. It also includes sheep in there.
Oh, okay.
Or a now extinct animal.
Oh, okay.
So it covers everything.
Covers everything then. Okay. So, okay. Yeah. So then we kind of go on here and we saw the, you know, we call it the framework of the building and how each they had the poles and, you know, how they fit into the sockets on the base and how everything was made to fit together and how it was built. Excuse me. Very fine, like the purple and scarlet material for the curtains, the pillars, and pretty much everything, or not everything, but a lot of things, if you notice along here, is overlaid with gold and added a tremendous amount of eye appeal, I would say, but also value to this thing for sure. And we've talked about how it really shows the value of this building. Here's just kind of a quick overview. And again, Kirk's used the illustration when we, or not the illustration, but said like a lot of these things, when you think about them, you really can't envision them, but we just have to imagine them, because we don't really have pictures of these things. And some of these pictures might, I mean, it might not look anything like this, but I think through some of the detail we can see in Scripture, we can get an idea of what it could look like. So here you can kind of see a rough general idea of possibly how it was put together. They had the, you know, with the crossbars and how they tied the beams together and stuff. And so it's kind of interesting to think about building that, and everything is made to take down, take apart, move somewhere else. It's I know, like when you go to family camp, we have the instant tents now where you just push the pole up in the middle or whatever and your tent's made. Like, this is definitely was not an instant tent. It was very well, very much hands-on, took quite a bit of construction. So that's just kind of where we're at with the building. Of that's where the point we're up to now. When we looked in Exodus 36 there, we saw the structure, I guess, being built. Now as we kind of continue on in chapter 37 is where we'll look at more today. And we're going to kind of see the contents that are in there and some of the things we're going to look at, the Ark of the Covenant, the gold lampstand, the table of incense, and we'll kind of take a look at some of those. And we'll just kind of go down through the list here. And again, these pictures are kind of just illustrations of what it, of what somebody thought it might look like, I guess. So if we wanted, somebody would like to read verses 1 through 5 of chapter 37.
Now Bezalel made the ark of acacia wood. Its length was 2.5 cubits, and its width 1.5 cubits, and its height 1.5 cubits. And he overlaid it with pure gold inside and out, and made a gold molding for it all around. He cast 4 rings of gold for it on its 4 feet, even 2 rings on each, one on each side of it, and 2 rings on the other side of it. He made poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold. He put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark to carry it.
Okay, so here we see the I guess the rough outlook of the ark here. And as we've seen throughout the construction of of the tabernacle, acacia wood has been kind of the theme. Tied up in the mic there. Acacia wood has kind of been the theme.
What is that?
And it's kind of a, it's found, it's a tree that's in a really arid region.
It's a real hard wood.
It's a real hard wood, and it's kind of almost, it's not like a, it's not what you would think is a good building material from this aspect, that it's not straight. These trees are very kind of twisted, and okay, and it's not like a nice, you know, straight pine tree where you can just cut nice boards very easily. But it's extremely, it's like really hard, but it's also rigid. It's a really tough building material, I guess. You can still get it today.
Yeah.
I mean, it still grows in many of those regions, and it's available. It's not probably the cheapest wood out there, but I think it's, you know, it served two purposes. For this, mostly, I think it's what they had. Yeah. It's what they had in that area. And then I think it was something that was probably pretty strong and rigid and was going to hold up, I guess. So, and then we look at the dimensions here. 2.5 by 1.5 by 1.5 cubits. And so size-wise, I was kind of trying to give us a picture of that. And it's about, I mean, very roughly, the size of one of those deep freezers in the kitchen back there. That's not quite exact, but that's kind of close. And a cubit, from my understanding, from the research I've done, is roughly about 18 inches. And what a cubit is when a man measures, or it's the measurement between his longest finger and his tip of his elbow. So if you wanted to test this, I don't know if this is quite exact, but get kind of straight here. It's about, I'm right at almost 18 inches. And so, but I was thinking about that, and I think they still would have had to have some rule of measure, don't you think? Because, Weston, you got a second? You want to step up here? Let's just test this out here on each individual. So now, a cubit on me was about pretty darn close to 18 inches. So let me just stand up here. You just stretch your arm out. We'll get on your, put your finger out straight there. Now, but kind of bend your elbow a little bit. There you go. We're going to look at about 14 inches on Weston. So if Weston and I were each building something, you can sit down now, bud. Thanks. If we were building something together, and he was building one side, and I was building the other, and we each measured with our own cubit, it's going to be pretty crooked, isn't it? I mean, that's just common sense. And I think probably a lot of, you know, if you want to say average people, if you measure that, it'd probably be pretty close. You know, but you're going to get an inch off or a quarter inch off or half inch off. And I had, remember one carpenter told me that in rough carpentry, the rule of thumb, like on a building, is they like to be within a quarter inch. And, you know, on a 60 by 80 building, that's, you don't notice it. I mean, it's pretty darn spot on. But if you're off 4 inches or 3 inches, it's going to be very noticeable quickly. So I do think that, you know, I don't think they were out there literally probably measuring with their hands. Maybe they were. I don't know. But I would think at some point they would have came up with a universal, this is just my common, or my brain thinking commonly here, I guess. They probably would have came up with some kind of a universal measuring device, whether they had a, you know, a cubit stick or something. Because I don't picture these things that were built, I don't picture them being this misshaped, misformed, funky looking thing. I don't believe. So I think, you know, definitely. So 2.5 cubits would be, a cubit is 18, so 2.5 would be 45 inches. So the thing was about that long, and then 1.5 would be 27, so it'd be about that wide. So just kind of an average size little deal, really. And then the same height there. When they say the terms here fully overlaid with gold, I'm not an expert on this. I mean, there's probably people out there that could give you a pretty good answer on this too. But when you overlay something with gold, like, I mean, how thick does it have to be considered overlaid? Is it, you know, is it just like a very thin, paper thin thing, or is it an eighth inch, a quarter inch? I don't know. But it, I mean, obviously it could, the thickness of the overlay would add obviously quite a bit of weight or a tremendous amount of value. You know, I mean, in strength. And so, I mean, there, that it can really change. And I think when we see a little bit further here, some more details, I think I get the picture anyway that it was a significant amount. And not to jump ahead real far, but if we see over in chapter 38, like the second half, it kind of goes through the cost of the tabernacle. In verse 24, it talks about the amount of gold, 29 talents and 730 shekels. Equivalent, what that would be, it's about 2,350 pounds of gold is what was used in the construction. And I mean, yeah. I mean, that's a lot of gold. About, it'd be, in today's value, it'd be about $75 million worth of gold. Now, if you want to put a value on what that would be in that time, I mean, I don't know if there's hardly even a number.
But it would be comparable, I'm sure. $75 million.
I mean, it'd just be, I don't know, trillions. I don't know. I mean, it's hard to even say. So, unbelievable wealth. And I mean, because like in today's standards, I mean, you can go to the fanciest building there is. I don't know, whatever you want to call it might be. I mean, how many things are overlaid with gold that are just out there? I mean, it's pretty incredible how they did that. And I'm going to back that up once. And then we saw, again, where they put the gold rings on there with the poles. And I think you get a pretty good depiction here of, you know, how those poles work, because, you know, they would pick it up and carry it. And the weight of this thing, I don't know. Is this something that, you know, four guys carried it? Or was there eight guys or 16? How many guys are on each corner? I'm not sure. But I imagine it, even if it wasn't super thick with gold, even just the wood alone, it would be, it'd have some weight, I would think. So it would, I mean, it was something that definitely took some thought into packing this thing around, I think, for sure.
That they weren't supposed to touch it. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah, just the handles.
Just the handles, yeah. So, I mean, and I don't think that was a suggestion. I think it was literal. I think, you know, probably when they fed the poles through the handles and stuff, they had to do it without touching it. Yeah.
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 The best of intentions, they still.
Right. Now that's probably a case there where God was using that for an example, and you know, not giving them an exception to, you know, to mess with it, probably.
Another foreshadow, probably.
Probably, yeah.
And all this golden stuff—that was stuff that they took from Egypt, right?
I would say that. Yeah, I would say. Almost all of it came out of Egypt.
As slaves, they wouldn't have had.
Yeah, but they plundered Egypt as they left, and I think that's where it came from. And I'm sure it came in all different forms. I'm sure it wasn't these nice, fine, you know, bricks of gold they were carrying. It was jewelry, and I mean, they worked all this stuff down and melted it down, and pretty talented craftsmen, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so if we move on now, just kind of continue on to 6-9. If somebody would like to read that.
Chapter 37, I'm sorry, yeah.
He made a mercy seat of pure gold, 2.5 cubits long and 1.5 cubits wide. He made 2 cherubim of gold. He made them of hammered work at the 2 ends of the mercy seat. 1 cherub at the one end and 1 cherub at the other end. He made the cherub of 1 piece with the mercy seat at the 2 ends. The cherubim had their wings spread upward, covering the mercy seat with their wings, with their faces toward each other. The faces of the cherubim were toward the mercy seat.
Okay, so here we see more of the idea of the gold here with the mercy seat. 1.5 wide, 2.5 cubits long, so it's the same dimension as the ark as it sat on top of it there. But it does not say the thickness of it. But it does say it is made out of pure gold. And the cherubim were pure gold as well. And just with that, without even knowing the thickness, at some point, I mean, there had to be a pretty good chunk of gold there, though. I mean, was it a quarter-inch plate? Was it 3 or 4 inches? I don't know. But the cherubim, you know, were, and again, this is just kind of an imagination what they might have looked like. They were all hammered out of one, made out of one piece. So I think even if the ark itself was reasonable to carry, with this on top, it had to add a tremendous amount of weight to it. So I think, and any time you have something that's made out of wood and it's overlaid with gold, obviously it has a lot of value. But when you have something that's just basically a big chunk of pure gold, I mean, that's just not something it's just not something that people have. It's just very, very rare, I think. But so I think that gives us a picture there of the extreme value there. And I think also, again, you know, you can look at the different foreshadows here and stuff too. This is, would be, in my opinion, which I can pretty strongly believe, I guess, that this is probably the most valuable piece in there, because it's probably got, you know, the most gold in the construction. If you wanted to put a monetary value on it, probably by far the most valuable piece, an individual piece there. But anybody got any thoughts? More there, and again, there's a lot more details to go along with the ark and the purpose and all that, and this is more of just running through the construction phase of it, I guess, here and stuff. So,
a shekel is one 10,000th of a talent. So, like, there's like 300,000 shekels just in the gold there, which would be like what I say is about be about a quarter of a pound, I guess a shekel would be of gold. So that's like, yeah, it's a lot of stinking.
Yeah, I think a talent I think is like 75 pounds. I think is what a talent is, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the shekel breakdown,
yeah,
is less, but
is less, yeah.
It's still.
It's like, it's but a talent of a shekel of gold nowadays would be worth like $128.
Yeah.
So it's like, would be, yeah.
So and I've wondered before too, like on the value of gold, is it more valuable today than it used to be? As well too. I mean, I don't know. Because
it seemed like they had a
lot of it.
Except for they did probably took most of it from Egypt.
They probably did.
So
and
probably did. I don't know.
I don't know either. I've you know there's
it was precious and it's hard to mine. It wasn't everywhere.
Right, and it wasn't just you know, like I said, it wasn't just in its pure form. I mean, it was very raw. They had to refine it, and I think it did have pretty strong value. I think
as you look down to the ages, gold was always a standard for money, and so I think it's pretty consistent. I think it's been pretty consistent all through mankind, you know, through history. Kind of, it's worth a lot of money. You know, so.
Yeah, I agree. I think so too.
And if it was everywhere, there wouldn't have been poor people back then either. I mean, they wouldn't have had some of it. If it was just, you know, accessed, everybody had access to it. You know.
Yeah, good points for sure. So, yeah, that's the conclusion I came to is without knowing exactly, you know, the thicknesses of the gold and different things, I think there's no way around it. That thing weighed quite a bit, and you know, with that being said, I don't like the acacia poles that they carried it with. I don't think they were just some little spindly little closet rod poles. I think they were very significant. And I think it would have probably taken a group of men to carry this thing, more than four. As that's what I think. I think there might have been, you know,
four on each end.
Yeah, there could have been four guys on each corner, yeah. Possibly even, or I don't, maybe more. I don't know, but because it doesn't say. No, maybe the poles might have been 30 feet long. I don't know. So, but yeah, some of these things. I guess when I just think at them logically, it was. I mean, really kind of a marvel. You know how they built this and how, and you know really how they accomplished this, and it really points to really how talented these guys were, because there's not a lot of guys that can just you know work with these materials and create these things.
Okay, if we move along here in chapter 37, still verses 10 through 15, we talk about the next piece here, and again just the detail that goes into each individual part here. Verses 10 through 15, if someone would like to read those.
Then he made the table of acacia wood, 2 cubits long and 1 cubit wide and 1.5 cubits high. And he overlaid it with pure gold. And is that where you want me to be?
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay. And made a gold molding for it all around. And he made a rim for it of a handbreadth all around, and made a gold molding for its rim all around, and he cast 4 gold rings for it, and put the rings on the 4 corners that were on its 4 feet, close by the rim were the rings, the holders for the poles to carry the table, and he made the poles of acacia wood and overlaid them with gold to carry the table.
Okay, so here just more of, you know, kind of you get the general idea of the construction process. So they're using, building these things with the acacia wood and then overlaying with gold. And again, it's a little smaller, 2 cubits versus 2.5 long. It's only 1 cubit wide, but in 1.5 wide, or 1.5 tall, so a little bit smaller table, but still not just a tiny thing. And then he talks about the made a gold molding around it, and then in verse 12 there it talked about made a rim that was a hand breadth all around. So I just picture it being, you know, basically a 4-inch, for our general idea, a 4-inch lip or rim all the way around it, you know, all covered or built out of gold. And so again, another valuable piece. For sure, and then the poles were of wood and covered in gold. And kind of the same concept, had the rings on there, they slid the poles through and pick it up and carry it. And I don't know if, you know, if there's any intention or if a person tried if you tried to break down the dimensions of these individual pieces, if there's any significance in those numbers, that's something I didn't do, and maybe not. You know, to me, those sizes they're practical,
yeah.
And maybe that's all it is. I there's so many different foreshadows and so much of this stuff, and I think a lot of them we even have a tendency to overlook.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that there couldn't be some significance to the dimensions, but that's not something I guess at this point I've looked into or given much thought to there. So could be something to think about. I don't know, but anyway. That's kind of the thought there behind the table. Anybody got any thoughts there?
No, I just think, again, it tells how precious God's dwelling place is, and it's, again, a foreshadow of what the church is, too, you know. He didn't hold back on anything. Everything's as
right.
good as it could be, probably.
I think so, yeah. All right,
if I'm carrying that, I want to be on that end, furthest away from the orchid.
Yeah, if there was four guys in a row, you want to be the guy on the end for sure. don't bump, don't push too hard back there, guys. more continue on with the building stuff here. Just verse 16. If somebody would like to read. Okay, so here we just see a few of the utensils, they call them, and the dishes. They were all on the table, pans, bowls, jars, and the utensils, all pure gold. These things were hammered out of pure gold.
It doesn't say anything about having a mold or nothing. They just hammered them.
Yeah, it. I should have. Well, there was. And right, like in verse 7, it's talking about the two cherubim that were made. He says he made them of hammered work. So you know that's, and then you'll see it here as we move on in verse 17 too. That the lampstands, they're hammered work. So I think they're forming them.
Yeah.
You know, they're not pouring them in molds. I think they're hammering, you know, basically hammering them out of a chunk of gold. And again, to me, that just points to somebody that's just incredibly talented, I think, for sure.
Well, and again, it shows how valuable it is.
Yeah. Yeah, when you build something with that kind of talent, too, it just adds incredible value to it. If we move on now, 17 through 24, somebody like to read this section here. Okay, so here we see the lampstand, and I don't know, it doesn't give, you know, like a height dimension. I don't know if it was just this little tabletop thing. I picture it as being pretty large, because I think this kind of illuminated the interior
of the tabernacle there. So I don't think it was necessarily a small lamp, but I mean, with that idea alone, you can't just say for sure that it was something big either. But common sense tells me there that it probably was a significant, probably stand alone, because I don't think it doesn't say anywhere where it sat on something else in particular. So I think it was probably a standalone lamp and probably had the function of lighting things up so they could see what they're doing, I think.
There were seven of them, I guess.
So. Yeah, and they were, well, it was one lamp standing with the different branches coming off it. Well, six, yeah, there's the center and then three branches on each side. But you look at the detail here, and again, you think about making this out of one solid hammered piece of gold is pretty incredible. Again, speaking to the skill that the guys were working with here. And then the things that went along with the lamp, they referred to as the snuffers. Obviously, to me, that's just what you put it out with. And the trays, I'm not sure if that's... I'm not sure what the trays would be right offhand. Maybe what
the top cup thing there the light would be there.
I wondered that. It would hold the oil, maybe.
Yeah.
Is what I was thinking, possibly.
That's what they burnt oil, I guess.
Huh? Yeah, it would have been an oil lamp. And then, but each different branch had the three bulbs built into it, and you know, very decorative. It wasn't something that was rough and coarse by any means. And again, a piece that was, you know, solid gold. Mm-hmm. So again, I mean, obviously that's the theme. We've seen that throughout the construction here, that even when they build something out of wood, it's generally overlaid with gold, or some pieces, as we saw, if you remember back, like during the structure, there were some pieces that were, you know, like the base sockets were covered in bronze, and then there was some silver in the construction as well, too. So maybe not everything was gold, but, you know, multiple things were, so. And then we move on. Another piece here is the altar of incense. Somebody like to read 25 through 28. Okay, so here again we see one of the structures, or not structures, but pieces in the appliances, would you call them? I don't know. That's probably not the right term either. Yes, Kyle, I got a hand up. Did I cut you off? Oh, that's never happened before. I'll let you finish. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Kyle, for pointing that out. Okay, so here we see, again, the construction, right? Acacia wood, overlaid with gold, got the four rings on it with the poles. And here, it's something a little bit smaller. One cubit square and 2 cubits high, so about 18 inches square and 36 inches high. So just kind of you kind of get a picture there. But again, overlaid with gold, and all these things, as you see, I mean, the general building idea was all the same, but they're all made with, I think, the two factors here. One was to show or to portray, you know, the great value of each piece, but also the practicality is they could pick them up and move them, you know, as needed as well, too. So, and both things were evident throughout all the different constructions here, we can see for sure. And then the last, just section of this chapter, verse 29. I'd like to read that. Okay, so here we have the anointing oil and the different spices and for the fragrance. And my pictures here I don't think are very, very good, because I think the vessels and containers that would have held them would have been gold. Would have been, you know, the pitchers and the jars and bowls that were on the table were all gold. And I think that probably would cross over to these containers as well too. But I couldn't really find what I was looking for, so I went with these. But so here we see some of the main features, I guess, of the interior, and how they were built, and you know, kind of the timetable as they were built here. And as you know, as we kind of get into the next section, I guess we will get into it next week, because I'll be doing this again next week. We're going to see more of the outside, the courtyard, and the things that are out there, and in the altar and for sacrifices and stuff. And then you kind of get, then you can kind of take these chapters and put them together, and you kind of see this whole thing. And then you know, the last thing that basically that we see as far as the construction phase, as we'll get into like in chapter 39, is the priestly garments. And we talked about them before too, and the significance that each piece had there. And then the last thing that they had to do from that point is put the thing together. So I'm sure that, especially the first time, would have been a little tedious, I think. But I think they probably would have figured it out pretty good. And as we've seen so much in this idea of the foreshadows of not only the journey that you know, the nation of Israel took as they came out of Egypt, but this tabernacle and how each piece is built together to, you know, to represent something. And I just can't go back to thinking. And right, I mean, and who was, what group of people dealt with building the tabernacle and putting it together and keeping it, basically taking care of it? I mean, which people were in charge of that? Anybody?
Like, it was a priest, right? The priest built it, right? So just with that idea, I mean, who constructs this building? The priests do, right? Is that not a foreshadow of the kingdom and the church and things of the new covenant? I mean, it's being built together by the priesthood, right? And we're all priests of God. So I don't think that was just a random thought. He just, well, we'll just take the priests and have them do it. I mean, there was a reason and a thought behind it. And that, I mean, to me, that just jumped out very, very boldly. As I saw that, and they are the ones that are responsible for it, and they're the ones that built it up, put it together. So, just one of the foreshadows that popped out as I was thinking about this stuff today. And we've talked about that some before, I know, in the past too. But I think we'll stop there for today, I guess, and as far as the construction phase, and maybe it's, you know, it's not as you read through these chapters, it doesn't take a lot of deep thinking, I guess, to break this stuff apart necessarily. But when you do think about it a little bit more, it, to me, it's pretty easy to see where, you know, these things do have significant meaning, you know, for us today as we look at them as a foreshadow. And it wasn't just some random thoughts that God put together and had them build this tabernacle just so they had a tedious task and something to do. I mean, he was using it to show people then, and I think even now it has meaning to us as we look at that, if we look at it correctly. And it's not, you know, so much a physical structure that we're looking at today, but, you know, obviously the church spiritually as we know it. But when you look at the construction details here, you can really see where they overlap and overlay into the church here. So, and I mean, as we go through the rest of the construction, and I mean, you can just see more and more things you can pull out easily to do that, I think. Anybody else have any comments or thoughts on any of that stuff today?
Yeah, I think just the overall foreshadowing of the church in it, and how precious the dwelling place was for him then compared to how precious we are as a dwelling place now. I think it's just a pretty encouraging foreshadow there, you know, that the worth of everything there, you know, and you think about, well, what are we worth, you know, and it's much more abundantly than what that was worth, and that was the greatest built thing known to man,
right?
You know, at the time. So
yeah, definitely you know, God views, you know, the church as, you know, out of this world value, I guess. I think you could say pretty easily. Steve, do you have something?
Well, and the dedication that people have done to do all this stuff, you know, and I think that's do the work, you know. So.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point to pull out there, because and when it came to building this, it took not only dedication but obedience too, right? They built this thing according to the specifications that he gave Moses, and Moses relayed to them. It wasn't he didn't give them a, you know, general idea, go build this big tent. He told them exactly how to do it, and for it to work, they had to follow those examples exactly. That thing wouldn't have got built if they wouldn't have done what they were told, right? Again, you can point that right directly to the church. Without people being obedient to doing what they are supposed to, the church is not built. You know, if they just take a general idea and then just add whatever they want to it, you don't have it completed the way it's supposed to. Yeah. All right, if that's it, we'll be good for today there, so.